Today on the Cooligans, Greg Berhalter has been let go. He has been downsized. They are trying to find a new coach for the U.S. Men's National Team. We'll talk all about that. Copa America, there was a brawl. There was an incredible game. Apparently, Darwin Nunez is like Dom Toretto. He is all solely focused on family. And we'll recap the Euros and do a little bit of a finals preview. I'm joined by Christine Kupo of CBS Sports today. Tune in. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Cooligans. I am back at home, and you know why. If you listened on Monday, your boy is still recovering from the 19, okay? We don't want to get flagged by some weird websites. No, I'm still recovering from COVID. I'm doing all right, but I am excited to be joined again by the homie of CBS Sports Golazo, attacking third, the one and only Christine Kupo. Kupo, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm still COVID free. Thank you for posting up at home and
exactly.
Not infecting me.
All right. This is I'm like a little bit sweaty because I'm, you know, you're still recovering and stuff. I had a little bit of a fever, but
you say that you're recovering. I think I just make you nervous.
No, this is the thing. This is the thing. I have a little I got a little paper towel to dab my sweat. I'm looking like, you know, one of the kings of comedy. Went like an old black comic on stage, you know, sweating like crazy. You know how it is, because they got to bring the heat at all times. But I'm excited about today because, I mean, just from Monday show to today, just a lot's happened. I mean, we always expect some just entertaining matches at the Euros in Copa America, wherever, U.S. Open Cup, who cares? We know the soccer ball never stops rolling. But this, we had an absolutely wild few days in Copa America, in Euros, with wild results and fights in the stands. We got another Malice at the Palace out in Charlotte. So a lot to go over today. But before any of that, we have to start with U.S. soccer. The U.S. men's national team is now coachless. Okay, they have their Facebook status is it's complicated.
No, they switched that to single already, and they are just out there mingling. The plus side is they're already sort of extending potential offers of interest, I'll call them, even at the international level. So there has not been a pause.
U.S. Soccer installed a couple dating apps. They're getting back out there, okay? They're having a little bit of fun, you know?
They're just swimming away.
Just to see who's interested. Who am I matching with? You know what I mean? Just to build, yeah, at least you build your confidence. Go on a couple dates.
U.S. Soccer right now is doing this, and they're like, we'll score through whoever swipes back after the fact.
Okay. Just swipe and pray. That's it. So, yes, Greg Berhalter has been fired by U.S. Soccer. So now the coaching search begins for a replacement. But let's first thoughts, because we heard that there was going to be news on Wednesday. And I mean, if you saw everybody on the timeline, people were like tagging U.S. Soccer like, yo, you up? Like, what's going on? Why aren't you, you know, we haven't heard anything. This is leading into the Copa America match. Like, we weren't even exactly sure beforehand, but this is we got the news eventually that he was let go, and we got comments from Berhalter himself. He made a statement, but initial reaction when you heard the news?
I it was time. I think that he took this team as far as he was capable. And with the failure that was Copa America, the writing was on the wall, right? I mean, and this goes well beyond the sometimes extremely warranted calls from a very rabid fan base for his head. He had his positives and he certainly had his negatives, but it ran its course. It was for sure when he was brought back after the consulting for a potential different coach, new coach, who would be the best fit for this team. and he was brought back, and the team were in full support of him returning. I think the expectation was, if that is the case, then we should see some sort of positive trajectory here. And it seemed like there was regression. And with that, I'm not going to say seemed like, there was regression. And so that is just a data point that I think it was beyond the appetite of U.S. soccer to continue the road with him. Thank you, part ways. It's as simple as that. It was a very warranted business transaction. Thank you, Greg, for what you accomplished. It's been real. It's time to move forward and really grow and re-solidify an identity for the men's national
team. My counterpoint would, or at least the one thing I want to highlight is like where you mentioning that it was sort of, you know, U.S. soccer feeling like, okay, he's sort of done all he could do. I don't think if there wasn't that public pressure from fans just absolutely being relentless about wanting him gone, I don't think he'd be gone. So we can only speculate because he obviously is gone. But
I don't know. I disagree about that only because the fan base has been exactly the same for quite some time, where they are incessant. If you spend more than 5 minutes online, you can see how aggressive some of these social posts have been on, and just even responses to the poor admin controlling the U.S. men's national team account, which obviously they can do very little. But the fan base has been very vocal for quite some time. I would shudder to think that this suddenly pushed them over the edge. But I think Copa America, I think, was just like a glaring failure. You couldn't ignore that. And that was his first real tournament post reappointment, where you expect this to be a brighter, more vibrant, talented group of players. And that's not what we got.
It felt louder, though, than usual. I mean, even our show has not existed through that many coaching changes in the U.S. I mean, we've had two stints of Berhalter. Before that, it was Bruce Arena. So we knew that was going to be temporary, you know, after he took over for Klinsmann. We're just in a state of social media where those opinions, even though they were incessant in the past, had either larger platforms or they were more often or more loud. I give some credit to where the culture of the expectations of the U.S. soccer fan, that it's just, they're like, I think I mentioned this before, but like they're just done with mediocrity. They are simply saying, we can't just be because I think if the U.S. men's national team had gotten out of the group, I think Greg still has his job. But to me, that's still a level of mediocrity, right? It's just like this was not, you know, the jokes are now, you know, now Tim Weah's red card was like, people are like, thank you for getting that red card because you got rid of the coach that we all disliked. And that's It's not supposed to make sense, you know, because even we're getting comments. Some people are attacking me. They're like, Christian, are you like bootlicking for U.S. soccer? And I'm like, bro, I don't necessarily like care if Greg Berhalter has this job or not. I want the team to do well. I'm not supporting him or I'm not necessarily calling for him to be removed. I think there is this you know, we were both at the event with Tim Weah. Like when you meet Tim Weah and you start talking to him and he's like, yeah, I love my coach. I love playing for this guy. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to take that into consideration and not just be like, nah, Tim, you don't know what you're talking about. I know what I'm talking about.
Right. You're going to have a far more measured understanding of what's going on. And I think that especially in social media, the bubble that exists, the appetite is for both ends of the spectrum, but not for anything measured or rational. It's like, and I guess that's what gets attention though too, right? That's why there's a lot of like really popular fan blogs because people want that like outrage monster. And that's just not the way that life works.
Exactly. This is why I think I'm never going to be really, really successful because I'm too rational. I can rage bait and I can try to get people all riled up, but I'm like, no, it's like I'll say this. I think Greg Berhalter did as good of a job as he could do domestically, right? Winning trophies, beating Mexico as much as we have. He has given us pride in the region to be like, we were always the little brother to Mexico and constantly being humiliated by them. And that completely flipped on its head, dominating them, where now that program looks like it is in shambles. They don't know.
Right. And but also it's more a symptom of their program is has been in the dirt for a while than U.S. has suddenly gotten immensely better. So it's two things at the same time. And I think that people want to acknowledge one more than the other.
Right. Right. And so it's not even to say like, oh, you should appreciate Greg for what he's it's like. No, whatever, man. Like it or don't like it. Like soccer is going to move on whether you like it or not. But I do think it's I think the. Just the discourse has just been a little bit unique and a little bit different than I'm used to seeing. It's just it's not necessarily like crazy or insane, but now, you know, the conversations, like the roller coaster of emotions of like Jurgen Klopp is available. Let's get Jurgen Klopp. And already the news is no, he's not interested.
Yeah. Wapo is like, thanks, but no thanks. I'd like to stay retired for a little bit.
It's always the grass always looks greener, but we have to be like kind of realistic of like, what are the potential candidates? Are they even interested in coaching this team? It's not like it's the one of the greatest jobs in the world and whatever. Like the team is the team. They are, I would say, underachieving, but it's a good group to work with. But I said this before, that the players that are playing, yes, they all play in Europe, but they barely get minutes. It's not all of them are not captains.
I've already gone through this on at least like two of our shows here about the scant minutes that players are actually getting, that everyone has this bizarre idea that somehow playing in Europe is better. Is it better when you're sitting on the bench? You need regular playing minutes, and there's no substitute for regular match time. It doesn't matter if you sit there and train all day, all night and kick a ball at a wall. It still is not a substitute for match minutes. So that's priority two. I also think that there's this distorted perception of what our team is capable of even with a great coach. Like, do you really think that even if we got like, this is completely far-fetched and do not clip this and say that I said this is reasonable, but Zizou in here, they're still going to be the same team. There'll be improvements. They're still going to have ceiling. It's not like we get a new manager and magically we're a world superpower. That's just not
if
it.
We got a manager that called every of their all of their clubs and called their managers and said, yo, make sure they all get 86 minutes a game. Okay. And then so if he can convince them to do that, then that's our guy. Okay. That I can understand.
Yeah. The problem is you need to give 86 quality minutes of each player. And I don't think that those players have 86 quality minutes each in them. So do you actually handicap your own club side because you want to help somebody's
how,
team? I don't think
how
so.
Could you suggest that it's a handicap? Okay, these are great. This is the best American talent we have.
Right, but what does that say about prior generations or the program or what's ahead?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's interesting because then these conversations happen about like the old guard, the older generation. I mean, a lot of your coworkers, the Brian McBrides, the Charlie Davies, the Clint Dempseys, you hear a little bit of like
Tony Miola. You can't leave out Tony.
You hear it's a little bit of like back in my day, the old heads, they have a say, and they're not necessarily wrong about maybe the mentality, even though they're playing in Europe and they have more opportunities than we did and are playing at a higher level, maybe they don't necessarily have the same mindset or mentality that we did back when we had less. And I'm not suggesting that.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree, because their time in playing, right? The game was different. The game itself has evolved, right? Tactically, strategically, player, what makes a whole midfielder, things like that. Things have changed and they should progress. So that doesn't invalidate their experiences. It's that it's just a different landscape now. And so when you look for, granted, the fundamentals are the same, right? But the way that things have been played and approached, the mentality on it is different.
Yeah, it is a look. It's a thing where you don't want to see the older generation pitted against the newer generation because
right? Because it's literally the difference between like a generation before cell phones and like your 3-year-old with their iPhone in their hand. Like, not to make that stark of a comparison, but like it is, right? Like, things have changed a lot about the game. A lot of things not in a good way, but obviously we've constantly been running catch up, especially on the men's national team side for the U.S. With the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And that hasn't changed.
Yeah, and I think the Tim Weah red card is a part of the game that has nothing to do with like what club you play at, whatever. It is just simply a mentality thing and dealing with and players have all had these negative moments, but it is something where, like, in my opinion, the older generation can critique that, those parts of the game, when it's like, all right, your mind and your focus is not totally in this tournament, and it was a mistake clearly, but it became a little, that's where the selfishness was at, where
right. And that things like that come down to being able to maintain your composure, maturity, and yeah, some of these guys are very young, right? So it's like, even younger than some of the people that are criticizing them during their playing career. So yes, like, you're going to make missteps. The point is you have to learn from them, and going forward, I'm sure he has, right? You need to be able to keep a lid on it, especially when it matters most, because it's going to impact your team. Things like that are teachable, right? Like, whether or not you learn the lesson the hard way, like Tim did, unfortunately, or if you have a really impressionable manager, able to be like, listen, this team is going to want to rile you up. When you look at a team like even Colombia and Uruguay, right? Those are teams that are just like peak level shithousery, and they're hard about it, right? Physicality, the chirping. If you're going to be super reactive to that, you are going to fall susceptible to doing something really, really stupid, and they will play to your weakness.
Yeah, and you have to it seems. Not exactly, I don't know if it's fair is the right word, but like, Greg Berhalter in his statement basically accepted the responsibility for the result at Copa America. And do we blame Tim Weah for that moment? Or do we say, and credit to Greg, because he took responsibility. He basically saying, like, I did not prepare my players well enough to not for Tim to not do that. Do you know what I mean?
Quite frankly, I think it befalls both of them. And I do think that as a good manager, that should be the statement that you make. I did not properly prepare them, because to do otherwise, you expose your player to a lot more scrutiny than they already are experiencing. And your job is to both teach them, but also, I think, protect them in a lot of ways. You should shield them from the public. So I think that he did handle that well. I do think it's both their fault.
Okay. I mean, and look, as far as Copa America, and you just mentioned Colombia and Uruguay, obviously, Canada Argentina beat Canada. Not too much of a shock. Messi gets his first goal. Congrats. They are in the final. But that Uruguay and Colombia game, which we all knew was going to be an intense match. That's exactly what it was. So we all predicted it, and it's exactly what happened. I think we didn't expect it to go the way it did, especially with a red card given in the first half. Daniel Munoz. That elbow was again, it just reminds me, I hate keep going back to the Tim Weah thing, but it's just like, you go into these games, you know what they're gonna do, you know they're trying to trap you,
right? And but it's impulsive, and once you know that somebody can be rattled like that, like, I used to figure out what really pisses somebody off and do it. I used to do that all the time. If you can get into somebody's head, they're more worried about you than what they're doing next strategically. And so, yeah, it's great. Let them take the red card.
Okay. I mean, Christine, don't reveal all your dating tactics on this show. People are going to be nervous.
I mean, mean, I also am like a really hard tackler, so you probably want to mind your ankles.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You just be careful what restaurant you pick, because you might be leaving in a boot. Huge win. Colombia get they get the goal off the set piece. James again having an incredible tournament. You have Jefferson Lerma who got the goal. But the Bahamas obviously a presence in the midfield and delivered the corner. But obviously the big story was just a couple things, right? Darwin Nunez going into the stands, but even before that, missing a lot of really, really great chances. It felt there were a couple, especially in the first half, it felt a little bit like he's like, I'm gonna be the hero today. I'm gonna do this today and bring you Uruguay to the final. And I probably missed a couple opportunities to just pass it off for what could be a better chance or maybe even a tap in, who knows. But Darwin Nunez makes bigger news because after the game, when there was already a scuffle on the pitch, something with Luis Suarez and one of the Colombian players.
When is Luis Suarez not fighting somebody?
As soon as you invite Luis Suarez anywhere, it's a little bit like
mind your ears.
No, you know there's a common like meme amongst Hispanic people where they say, si sabes cómo soy, ¿por qué me invitan? Which means, if you know how I get, why are you inviting me? And that's Luis Suarez. It's like, you can't even be mad at him. You got to be mad. We all have to collectively be upset with ourselves. As soon as Inter Miami heard that Uruguay were calling him up, which is already kind of a big deal because he seemed like he was like pretty much done, but
he's been declining. He's slower. For sure, undeniable.
And even in this game, he had a couple chances as well to at least tie the game, and it didn't happen. But at the end, he goes up to somebody and. I don't know what he said, but yeah, as soon as Yerry Mina checked into the game, I was like, okay, we know what's going to happen. these are the two. I mean, if it was like a trash talking UFC match, these are the heavyweights. These are the two best at it, especially in South America. And so that's where it kind of started. And then, you know, some people are shaking hands. Some people are clearly upset and arguing. But then for some reason, we see in the stands, like stuff starts kind of happening. And you just assume, oh, fans are probably drunk and whatever. And then eventually you see Darwin Nunez and you see several other players. Araujo was there, who was injured, but he was in the stand. People are trying to hold Darwin Nunez back. Some people are trying to like protect others. And then we learn about that was where the families.
Those were absolutely insane scenes anywhere at any time. But to eventually find out that he was literally diving into the stands to try to protect his family, that's a whole other level of discussion that just shouldn't even be a possibility when you just got done playing a Copa America match.
Yeah.
I mean, any match at all.
It's bad. I mean, I've tried to parse everything I've seen. I'm sure you've looked at all the different videos, all the different angles. I've seen a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Okay. We're all the same. All right. We all want like the tea and whatever. So the one I the first one, like from the regular broadcast, Skycam thing is going in sort of into the stands, and you see the players. It just seems like, oh, the players just ran in and are just fighting folks. So it didn't really make much sense. But then when you see there were a lot of like people that we know that work in soccer that were sort of in that section. So and they were filming it and had a very, very good look at it. The clearest video I've seen was from this YouTuber. His name is QC Javi. He is based in Charlotte, and go follow him. Great dude, and he does. I saw he was doing stuff at TST when I was there. And you can clearly hear the Uruguayan player, and I forgot exactly who, but he was one of the guys that started. And he said, "Familia no, familia no." He's saying, don't do any, the family here, don't fight the families. And this is where we learned later, like that the Uruguayan players, the center back Jimenez was talking about it, that they were the Uruguayan players' family, that was their section, and they're being harassed by these Colombian fans. And Jimenez said that they were too drunk and whatever. I've also heard, you know, this as well. I've heard that the Uruguayan fans that were in that section as well, nobody's saying that it was family, but that they were also kind of jawing back and forth with the Colombian fans as well. I'm not here to take sides because the violence at any game is horrid and horrendous and should not happen at all. The context I sort of want to talk about this is in the Darwin Nunez and the players who are getting in that moment. Because initially, when I first saw it, I'm like, Darwin Nunez, what an idiot. Why is he going crazy? Why is he doing? He's going to ruin his career. He could get injured. He's going to, you know, get a crazy suspension. And then when you see him holding his kid on the stands, and he's like nearly in tears and emotional, worried that something could have happened to his children or to his family or to his partner. Then I'm at that point, I'm like, Darwin, like, yo, you had to do what you had to do. Like, it's bigger than soccer. And I understand that. But the other moment as well was before he went into the stands, he like threw a chair at the wall, like where the fans were standing. So there was so much antagonism and frustration and anger that it's just a bad look overall. And yeah, you have to put the responsibility on Darwin, on the Uruguayan players that were involved. You have to put the responsibility on those Colombian fans that threw punches. The Duga guy threw a punch right at Darwin Nunez. Like, this is just insane.
I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, Nunez had about as many punches on target as he did shots that game.
That's a thing.
No lawsuit.
It's that. It's
but
go.
It just. The thing is, there's always going to be that element of rivalry and talking as a fan. It should never escalate, ever, ever escalate. I don't care if it's like, oh, you threw a beer on me. Like, there's no reason that anybody should be punching each other, throwing things. It just is probably one of the worst parts of football culture that we have. Everything else is so good. And then there's this massive blemish. Well, this, the racismo, and the homophobia. The worst parts. Like, let's just get rid of that.
Yeah, we don't need it. It was just it's shameful and it's embarrassing on all parties. I mean, the one thing is, like, you can't blame Darwin Nunez. Like, you
no,
understand.
I would 1,000%, and I said this before, would be repelling up there like I'm Spider-Man. Like, I don't care, but, like, if you're going near my family, it's on site. I don't care what the repercussion is. I'm protecting my people. So I get why he did what he did. And I don't think that you would otherwise make that extreme of a decision, because you also put yourself in danger, right? Like, there's a number of things that could have gone worse than they did. And thank God they didn't. But where was security?
Yeah, that's really and this is the interesting thing about.
No, like, this legitimately, actually, I'm so angry about this, because the chunk of budget that's devoted to security for these tournaments is massive. Where was security?
This is my guess, because I was thinking about the same thing. And obviously, CONMEBOL is running this tournament here in the U.S. This has nothing to do with...
So you think they just slipped somebody a fiver and said, you got the gate?
It feels a little bit like, you know, they took the approach that they usually have in South America is, like, you keep the fans of the different the opposing countries, you keep them separated, they do not interact, and you have security guards at that border where those two fan bases meet. They have a wall of security. You see this with, like, you know, stewards wearing the orange or the yellow. and they keep those fans apart. So it's something that it sort of felt like Conmebol was like, oh, it's the U.S. It's all kumbaya. They don't really do soccer like that. They're not big football people. They're not going to get like that crazy. We're going to let them, you know, they'll be mixed and it won't be that big of a deal. And for the most part, it probably is not. It's probably not a big deal. But look,
the problem is the precedent for having security like that had been set due to prior world issues with fans and things like that. I don't think the argument should be, oh, it hasn't happened here, or we think that they should be more calm, so we will like just not mitigate that threat. Like, that's insane to me.
Right, right. Look, that's my guess. That's the only thing I could think of.
I'm sure it is, because we were just talking earlier today about how the women's Euros, they had pledged 15 to 17 Swiss francs for the women's Euros, which is pales in comparison to like the 70 plus million francs that they have for the men's Euros, right? And they had conceded and were like, oh, we'll give you 4 for women. And then you go back and look and realize that there's a significant chunk of the men's budget that actually is devoted to security, but they kept whittling it away because they're like, oh, we don't need it for the women. Right. Nobody's going to.
Yeah, yeah. Look.
So I don't doubt that was the logical leap for them, or granted wrong, but I'm sure that was the thought trajectory.
Yeah, it's clearly, irresponsible and definitely like, you know, I understand. I was at the Argentina-Chile game. I mean, yeah, there were a fair amount of Chileans, but there wasn't, it was a group stage game. I'm not like the context of it is also matters, right? It wasn't, I didn't see anything crazy, or I didn't feel like there was any sense of danger, but clearly as you're getting closer to the final, the teams really, really want to win. And there's clearly a lot of like pressure. So you would think, from a security perspective, like, all right, let's hire a couple more folks, just to, in case anything gets crazy. And then even when Darwin Nunez is in the stands, and if you're watching the clip, there are, I don't know if it's security or maybe team staff or something, but it felt like more people were trying to keep Darwin Nunez away rather than keep the people that were like attacking them away from, you know what I mean? They were just like, yo, the players, y'all need to get out of here, because this is.
That's why I suspect it was team staff related, because priority uno would be to protect Darwin Nunez. How do you explain to like his club, like, hey, this small thing happened. You might have seen it in the news.
And it's like the dudes throwing punches should have been, apprehended by security, but there seemed to be no one there to do anything. So it's just a really shameful situation. And, there's a lot of people responsible. My hope is I saw somebody like either have a cut or something like that. I don't know if it was a Uruguayan staff member or something, but it seems like there weren't any super serious injuries. So we can be like sort of grateful for that, but just not a good look overall. And it takes away from like what Colombia did accomplish on the pitch, because that was remarkable to do that in that second half with 10.
Yeah, they look great. 10 men.
10 men.
Honestly, Uruguay just looked really messy, especially toward the end, just like missed passes, lots of like bobbles and bobs that you're like, what is this? Like, it reminded me very like U8s, like kick the ball into the other teammate's shin. And like, I don't know, it was very uncharacteristic of a team that otherwise looked good. And Colombia, the intensity, it never wavered. Even down to 10, you saw like continuing to press as a team, not giving Uruguay any space, closing in really tightly, getting in behind their lines, like capitalizing on every single error. They had that keeper error early on.
Yeah,
in the second half where it was like.
Also weird. He made a flubbed clearance in the first half as well, with just like odd mistakes. I guess it was a
strange, very strange mistakes to be happening at this juncture, especially when you've seen them play much, much better as a cohesive unit. I personally, Uruguay, I was favoring them because I'm like, all right, one, I love Bielsa, so first and foremost. I have to acknowledge that. But I was really expecting much, much better than what they were capable of. And to not be able to take advantage of playing against a 10-man Colombia is embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a given how how great they looked throughout the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything that can be said is they did very well defensively because Colombia has scored the most goals in Copa America. The biggest threat in this tournament has been Colombia scoring goals. So great for mitigating that, but you didn't manage to score a single
goal. Yeah, Colombia should have had 3 goals in that game, which it was a kind of a miracle that they didn't score more, even with 10 men. It was kind of shocking. And credit to the way Colombia defended, but it did feel like this game was played in Charlotte, which is also, you're also thinking, you know, wherever you Uruguay play, they're not going to, it's a very small population. It's a very long country, but they have a fairly small population. So even in the U.S., there aren't so many Uruguayans. There are a lot of Colombians all over the country. And this I think the nerves got to them a little bit because they were making just little mistakes and not connecting pass. Especially when you're up a man, you should... I mean, look at when Panama was up a man against the U.S. I was just like, yo, is this are we watching the Uruguayan national team? Like, why are they so composed and controlled and they barely let us get the ball? And that was not the case. So credit to Colombia.
No, I mean, even in the dying minutes of this match, like Uruguay sending their keeper up so that they're now up 2 men for that corner and not being able to do anything with it.
Huge for Colombia. So we know obviously the final is going to be Colombia and Argentina. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. I want to just talk about the Euros that we saw. And obviously, Spain defeated France on Tuesday, 2-1. Lamine Yamal was the star because that goal was one of the best of the tournament. Phil Foden tried to recreate it, but didn't get it in. But Lamine Yamal, not only was the goal great, but I really loved after the game his comment because he was saying basically habla ahora, meaning like talk now. And we all sort of knew. We also didn't know who he was talking about in Adrien Rabiot, the midfielder for France. And it was just so serendipitous because, I mean, he is the man that he dipped his shoulder, sent him. He was like, yo, go pick up your ankles over there. I got something. I got a little message for Mike Maignan right now. OK, it's a long distance.
I love that French team, but they've really underperformed and they have been. So it just... Good on Spain.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's been a lot of
ride it out.
There's been a lot of that through these Euros. I think it's every
Euros have largely been just like very unexciting, which has been disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say unexciting, but definitely underwhelming. It's like the you know, on paper, we are told these are the teams that are supposed to be good. And then we watch them and it's like, OK, well, what is this? I've been bamboozled. I've been led astray.
I'm starting to think that just like the frequency in play and the impact fixtures are starting to grate on players. There's only so much that you can do to mitigate fatigue and injuries and everything else and nutrition and whatnot for pro athletes, like outside of just making them not human anymore and like making soccer bots.
I wonder, ChatGPT, make soccer players if you can. I wonder if Mbappe didn't get his nose broken, would that have made much of a difference? Because the entire French team were not very good. It's hard to see what we saw like at the World Cup, 2 years ago to this. It's just like they couldn't figure anything out. And Mbappe creating unbelievable chances and then rocketing the ball over the bar just to kind of make no sense. So England, let's talk England, Netherlands, because this was the controversy here was the penalty. That's really what people are still talking about. Dumfries fouls Harry Kane in the box. He's taking a shot. The follow through, He doesn't hit the ball. He just hits Harry Kane at the top of his foot with his studs. It initially is not called a foul. VAR gets involved and says, hey, take a look at this. I think this might be a penalty. And the ref awards it. I am team pro penalty. I say that's a foul anywhere on the field. How do you feel about it?
I would, first of all, be the worst referee on the planet. I say that first and foremost. I'd say it's a penalty.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it felt like the, you know, Virgil van Dijk was talking about, you know, after the game, he said that, it said a lot that the referee went into the tunnel and didn't shake hands, with us afterwards.
Yeah. It's not the first time we've seen a ref do that, but it's just like it's so unprofessional. Like, I feel like at the end of the day, just like, shake the hand and keep it moving. Like, there's no reason to create this like dramatic scene where everyone's focused on you going into the tunnel, ignoring somebody.
Right. And yeah,
it's not about you, ref.
And it wasn't like Netherlands like got played out of the park. I mean, they had a couple chances here and there, and they just couldn't get it done.
It's an unfortunate way to lose, for sure. I would be absolutely irate if I was all Holland, and then
they did, but they lost because of the goal from Ollie Watkins, not because of the penalty. In my opinion, I mean that's the other conversation.
Well, I think that's the argument.
Yeah.
Right? Is like,
and yeah, look, the
if it weren't for the pen, like that changed the momentum and blah blah blah, and the reffing and there's always this
coulda, like, shoulda, woulda.
It's the same, like, I feel like you can copy and paste the same argument over a lot of some of the divisive ref calls. It doesn't matter who it is, right? Like, it's constant. I actually get really tired of it because it's constant. Like, it's a ref conspiracy, and it's like, is it? Well, is it? Or did your guy just foul somebody?
The funny thing is with the ref that called this game, was the ref that was very controversial because he got in trouble for like a gambling scandal. I don't know the details, but he was involved in something and he got punished for it. But he is a experienced referee who has reffed other matches at the Euros.
I mean, they need to button it up, right? If you get pinched for gambling, I feel like you should be done. Like, your reffing career, especially if you're betting on games that are in your orbit.
Yeah. Like, it's a strange culture where I feel like the culture is changing of how people feel about gambling. It went from, you know,
Well, yeah, because now you can just go into your phone in an app and gamble. So, like, it's because we've changed it using electronics. Like, there's plenty of people that have gambling addiction and otherwise. We now just put it in their palm when they're
bored. It's just when it comes to the actual athletes or people involved in the game that can influence the game, that's when I get like, all right, man, like, you don't need the money that bad. I mean, that's kind of my perspective. But the goal from Ollie Watkins, it had me at least question, because I mentioned this a couple weeks ago when England started the Euros underperforming, underwhelming performances. I said, bench Harry Kane. We've seen what he can do. Yes, he has a moment here and there, but you have Ivan Toney, you have Ollie Watkins, you have these great scorers that could contribute something. Let's just at least see what they got. And then Ollie Watkins comes in.
I think it's more the fear of benching Kane.
Yeah. Are we treating him?
Unfortunately.
Is Gareth Southgate treating him, giving them the Ronaldo treatment? And I'm not saying Harry Kane is not like being selfish in a game the way Cristiano was. But
no, but if you're not productive and you still expect to play the same amount of minutes and get the starts and all of that, I think that is a conversation that you need to have at that point. And I don't think that there's anyone that's going to be like, I'm benching him. Because on the other side of it is, what if he does perform like he does for club? And now you're the guy with the egg on your face as a manager because you benched Harry Kane, and everybody's like, you know what he can do. It's, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
I just like it, given the way they were performing at the beginning of the tournament, I was just like, how could this? It makes no sense to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And it's not to say, it's not even a knock on Harry Kane, but it's just like, it's just really just to highlight the incredible amount of talent that you have at the striker position for England. It made no sense. And I was happy for Ollie Watkins to have that moment. And I'm happy for for, you know, Ivan Toney to make his penalty in the prior game. You know what I mean? Like, this, these are good examples that these guys can contribute. And I love Harry Kane, his statement afterwards. He was just like, you know, supporting Ollie Watkins, is saying, like, you know, that that everybody here can contribute, everybody here can win us the Euros, whether you have 1 minute or whether you have 100 minutes, you know, anybody can make a difference. So it's obviously the right thing to say, and he doesn't sound like he's a jerk about getting benched or anything like that, which is
how dare you bench me,
which is why you should bench him, because he seems like a pretty nice guy about it, especially since these other guys can't contribute.
He seems like a pretty nice guy about it, so you bench him, and you're in the dressing room with him.
Exactly.
Squaring up.
All right. So they look. They so England are facing Spain in the final, which I don't know. You're on TikTok like I am, and so you know the English or Spanish. Who do you think is going to win? Do you know that guy that does English or Spanish, which is just one of the silliest and most immature trends that is always hilarious. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, it's just look up English or Spanish or TikTok. It's the stupidest and funniest thing you've ever seen. They're going to be playing in the final, and we'll talk. So we'll be right back in just a moment, and we'll go over the finals for Copa America and the Euros this Sunday. It's just sitting in one spot watching so much goddamn football. It's going to be great. Let's preview the Euros and Copa America. The Euros will be happening first. So England against Spain. This is going to be, it's going to be an exciting game. You have to favor Spain. They have looked better throughout the entire tournament. Again, this is I wonder, I guess my main question I have is, like, how conservative is Gareth Southgate going to be? Because I don't think there's any issues with Spain really going for it, but what do you think is the approach Southgate will have on this one?
I think the thing with him is I feel like he doesn't deviate very much, and I think that's part of, like, his Achilles heel. I feel like he's made some questionable moves already, like, this tournament that have been a little bit frustrating, and we have not seen an England side that really, I'd say, is to, like, on paper, you'd be wildly impressed. Like, oh, those are really good players. They just have been underwhelming. Even Kane's been underperforming. So I feel like unless they play, like, super defensively, you know that Spain have, like, a lot more flair.
Yeah. I think as far as the specific decisions, so starting Kieran Trippier, which is, okay, so he's a right, he's a right back playing at left back. He's a right footed. He's playing as a right footed left back. And it's so weird that, like, if you are a person that pays attention to the sport and the details, you can see he's not comfortable. You can see in the way he positions his body to make certain passes. You can see the lack of crosses coming from the left side in that first half. So what's been happening the last few games, especially since Luke Shaw has gotten sort of back to fitness, is Kieran Trippier starts the first half and Luke Shaw starts the second. In my opinion, start Luke Shaw. He is left-footed at the very least. He is left-footed, and that you saw it in the game that they played in the game against Netherlands, that there was at least a threat that the right back on the other team had to be like, he might cross it, and I have to be aware of that. And with Trippier, it's like, nah, that is not happening. He's not sending in a confident cross, or the ones that he did send in, keeper was like, gimmies, this is all me, thank you.
I love when I have to do analysis and criticize someone for being, like, right-footed when I'm, like, the most right-footed person ever, and I'm like, nah, it's not that bad, bro. You could just use the outside of your boot. It's fine. Why do you need a left foot?
This is coming from someone who, if you can completely take off my right leg, and I will competently play a soccer game for you. I no left foot whatsoever.
But yeah, that feeling of being really uncomfortable is not helpful. I've definitely been in that before. Like, I also don't like playing centrally. When you feel like a fish out of water and you're spatially off, everything else is going to be off. And, like, bless him for trying, but it just, yeah, I would have flipped that, like put Shaw in. I haven't seen a benefit yield to starting Trippier like that.
Yeah. I think it's clearly Luke Shaw's not starting because they don't think he can play a full game. So understandable. But
but you're going to tell me that you have no depth. There's nobody else that you could have.
That's on Southgate for like,
again, picking. I just feel like Southgate isn't long for this world. Like maybe if they somehow pull off these Euros. But again, like this is their second back-to-back Euro finals, which is commendable. But like, are you going to be able to get this done? Right now, if I were a betting woman, I'm going with Spain. They just seem far hungrier, more organized, more clinical, in contrast to England. I feel like England have kind of just been like patching it together as they go.
Yeah, and even in their style of play, like just their two wingers and having Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams, like regardless of where the ball is on what side of the field, like those two guys attract a lot of attention. The defenders have to like shift their feet a lot because they know they're quick, and you can see, obviously you saw what Lamine Yamal was capable of, and that is something that they're like that they're worried about. So for England side, like I mean, I think the decision to start Kobbie Mainoo over Trent Alexander-Arnold is the right decision. That's it. Trent, I think he's a great, he's good at what he does. I said this before, he should be the right back instead of Kyle Walker. This is the thing. They are not creating enough offensive opportunities because I think the fullbacks are not these sort of great attacking threat. If Kieran Trippier was on playing right back, makes sense. I get it. I think there would be more attacking chances created and stuff like that. But it's just the lineup and the decisions lead to these performances. They're just like kind of underwhelming. Yeah. So
I mean, I feel like all in, right? Like you'd expect more goals out of Foden, out of Saka. There's a lot of talent on that team that just hasn't been able to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, it's a so I'm looking forward to how I would love like these puzzle pieces, what is going to sort of change. I'm expecting they're going to have to put in an incredible defensive performance to hold off Spain, and then to hold and then
sure. Look, and can also, they score like, a couple. Spain are much much quicker tempo in their play. They're fast. So
right.
You know, it's a little bit of just like setting up roadblocks for them.
Yeah, I mean, in the last final, they played against Italy, and Italy won in penalties. But two very different types of teams, and much more sort of attacking threats for Spain. We have friends, and we have and the soccer community, especially the people who call it soccer community. They don't want England to win because they don't want them to see any joy whatsoever. My best guess, I think they're also going to be unhappy. I don't see how they can figure it out. And if they can, credit to them. I think they are going up against a much not necessarily individual players but they're going up against a better team.
And
so
plus the English fans have already began singing "It's Coming Home," so they've now just like activated the hex. So
I just love how Gareth Southgate is just like this terrible manager who's just constantly in finals and really getting the team so far.
He's like, thank you guys for getting me here, and we'll see what happens next. And then he still has a job, so we'll see.
So it's gonna be on the coaches, I think, on this one to see who wins. I mean, if Gareth Southgate can do it, I think that would be absolutely tremendous.
And then he doesn't, and the US offer him the job.
that's what I was gonna, come home baby, come home, we got you. I saw Paul Tenorio on Golasso mentioned this. I think it was on either Box to Box or something like that, and I mentioned that they should hire Gareth Southgate for the U.S. job, and it was like I did the Arthur fist. I was so upset that he suggested that.
There's definitely so other names being thrown around that are more feasible, like Herve Renard. They should knock on his door and see perhaps what he'd like to do maybe here.
Yeah, that's a man I'd swipe right on. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
Press the white button down.
Yeah, man,
a manager
he has
that would be like, Ale, what are you doing? That is shit.
Well, my man, he has a uniform. You know what I mean? He just, he's like, this is what works for me.
Most importantly, he's got a flow. He's got hair.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
got the crisp white button down.
Yeah, yeah.
We
no,
can do
my man
that.
Is
that would be a nice identity for the U.S. men's national team.
A passionate Frenchman. Lovely. Okay. And then now the Copa America final, Colombia, Argentina. I don't know. We may differ here. I think Colombia wins this game. I'll say this. After watching Argentina, obviously, throughout this tournament, after watching them play in person, the thing I will credit them on is they are, you know, everybody talks about Messi and all their scorers and whatever. But
and whatever. Christian is over Messi.
I said this before. I said the Argentina national team looks like Lionel Messi and 11 N'Golo Kante and 10 N'Golo Kantes. Enzo Fernandez, Rodrigo De Paul, I believe, is their best player. He is a dog out on the pitch. He does not even think about playing like this for Atletico.
I miss him so much in Serie A.
Yeah.
I really
yeah.
do. He is great for Atalanta.
He is unbelievable and winning balls, challenging for the ball. Great passes. He had the assist to Julian Alvarez the other day. My man is just unbelievably intense. The workhorse on the pitch. But this is the thing. I think Colombia has the same exact. They have four or five of those guys, and I think. Argentina only have like two or three. So I think when it comes to being just an absolute workhorse and a dog on the pitch, I think Colombia has more of those guys, and there's going to be a lot of fouls.
Oh yeah. It's going to be a very intense match. It's going to be very physical. I think that also just knowing that they haven't been here since 2001, they are very hungry. So now they've already kind of done the impossible with that win streak, which is already impressive, right? Like, all kudos to Colombia. They have played a beautiful tournament. But it will come down to who really, really wants to get this done in the final. I would never, ever, however, discount Argentina. You cannot count them out. They're very used to this, is what I'll say. You know what I mean? Like, where you think like, oh, they haven't really been overwhelmingly good, but they can pull it out in the moments when it most counts. And so there's a lot on the line now, you know, and potentially, you know, everybody's looking at this as like, oh, Messi's last Copa America.
Yeah. I mean, the storyline is there, but I think the biggest advantage that Argentina have is their goalkeeper. I mean, Martinez is...
Dibu is insane.
Not only is he just good, but
actually, I think, insane. Like,
but that's most goalkeepers, but he's on another level, right? He not only is he, like, obviously in penalties, and we know how amazing he is at stopping shots and stuff like that, but there's something to where it seems like teams can't even develop good enough of a moment to even take a shot. You know what I mean? Like, there's an intimidation factor that he's not even seeing crazy shots that he has to stop. You see at Aston Villa, he has to like really go kind of wild and do and make a big save and keep them in games. But that's not really the case here. And credit to
a recent transfer rumor surrounding him too, that he could be like, hey, let me crank my stock a little bit while I'm out here at Copa America. To move away from Aston Villa. But yeah, he's excellent.
Yeah, yeah. He's been great. So that's
his team not playing against him because I'm like, he's so infuriating.
It's like if this game goes if it goes to penalties, which now in the Copa America final there is extra time for just for the final, and then it could go to penalties. If it goes to penalties, like Argentina has, right? So, but this is where I think that Colombia has the advantage in their set pieces. They have larger center backs, taller, I think physically stronger kind of midfielders and center backs. So I think this game is going to be probably won on a set piece. And if they do, if the game is won by anybody, I think it's going to be Colombia, and it will be a set piece. But if it's a dogfight when nobody can really score, I'll probably favor Argentina, because the Colombian goalkeeper is pretty good, but he's not Emmy.
I think that despite the fact that both teams are incredibly physical, Colombia is more so. So it's like prepare for. But again, like how many more red cards do you want to take in a single tournament?
Yeah. I mean, this is the first Copa America final for Colombia since I believe 2001. And you saw James Rodriguez talk about making it to the final. He couldn't even get sentences out. He was in tears. And even Luis Diaz talking about James Rodriguez making it to the final, he couldn't even get the words out, how emotional and how much it meant for Colombia. So it feels like we all know the storyline for Messi, maybe, you know, his last Copa America and stuff like that. But bro, these parceros, these Colombianos, this is going to be an important one for them. I think the story.
Colombia have certainly been building to this, right? Because they've gotten into the last three semis of the last four Copa America tournaments. And so it's like now they're finally breaking through. But like, how long did that take? Literally, their last entrance and win was 2001.
Yeah. There's a lot, you know, and players like James Rodriguez who was on the outs. He didn't get called up for like two or three, I think, windows. And he wasn't sure what was going to happen. Look, I'm an Everton fan. You see the shirt right here, man. My man is an Everton legend forever, bro. He should please come back to my club, James. We did you wrong. I'm sorry.
Everton's done a lot wrong, but yeah, that was probably not a notable positive move.
Yeah. An incredible. So this Sunday, both finals are happening. They're going to be really, really dope. We'll be back on Monday recapping all of them. I will be back. David Goss will be joining me on Monday, by the way, because Alexis will return the following Thursday. So yeah, so it's going to be I'm excited. I mean, we usually don't get two finals like this on the same day.
Yeah, no. And I feel like even for just broadcasting reasons, they try to not do that, especially when it's a major tournament. But here we are.
But no. This is a Super Sunday. Super Sunday footy. So it's going to be great. As always, Christine Kupo, thank you so much for joining me at CBS Studios. We appreciate it. Let everybody know.
Studio again. Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah. Let people know where they can follow you and where they can see your work.
Of course, you can hit me on X at C Kupo, Instagram at Miss Kupo, and then watch Attacking Third every day at 4 p.m. on Golazzo Network. But you can catch me on other Golazzo Network shows, so I pop up everywhere.
Exactly. Kupo, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Everybody else, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social channels, X, Instagram, TikTok, the whole thing. We're on Mondays and Thursdays. Tune in, subscribe, hit subscribe on YouTube as well. Also, check out Yahoo Sports for all your soccer coverage powered by One Football. And also, shout out to Hillary, who is producing the show today. One-off or whatever. We both just met Hillary today, but she's crushed. She crushed it. So thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday talking about these what is expected to be very wild finals in Euros and Copa America. Thank you so much, everybody. Peace.